Welcome to VentureCast 23. I'm Craig Seferson of Grunt Media.
We're diving right in. And I am David Hornick of August Capital. That's unbelievable.
You know, cut to the chase.
Excellent.
This program brought to you in DCE, Digital Consumer Enablement, just because we care about you, our digital consumer.
I think that we should make this available as an iTunes Plus.
iTunes, oh, right.
Don't you think?
Well, it's in DCE, and yeah, and then we'll raise the data rate.
Right, we'll raise the data rate, and we'll raise the price.
Yes.
30% more than zero? 0.30%. That's Mr. Math.
Thank yeah. So where do we start? It's been nutty, hasn't
yeah,
it?
But, oh my God, crazy.
The past couple weeks?
We got all these acquisitions, we got all these financings, we got...
We got that big conference you went to.
Yeah, that was... You tell me. Mm. Happy to start anywhere you'd like. What are you curious most about this fine Friday, Craig?
Well, goodness. I am curious about FeedBurner. I know what's close to your heart.
Indeed.
What have you heard?
Well,
what
it's
does Dick
now
say?
Official, right?
Yeah, I thought...
FeedBurner themselves are admitting it.
They are admitting it.
I don't know if they talked about price, but...
No one did, according to at least Mike Arrington this morning.
All right.
As of this morning.
They won't say.
But
you know, look, Dick's a great entrepreneur. I'm sure he got a reasonable price for what has proved to be a very interesting asset in a growing space. And, you know, this is just another stomp towards domination by Google.
Domination.
Now, you know, they get to own RSS feed advertising as well.
So you think that's the thing here?
Well, you know, I've been a member of an ad network through VentureBlog.
Uh-huh.
So VentureBlog is part of the Venture Capital Ad Network, which is an aggregation of a lot of different venture capital blogs. And then advertisers can buy ads into the whole network.
I see. That's all those ads I see on VentureBlog. All that money you're making.
Now, my friend, first of all, there are no ads on VentureBlog proper.
Proper.
If you go to VentureBlog.com, you'll see no ads.
Right.
If you get the RSS feed, yeah. I did want to see sort of how it would go.
Yeah.
So I did sign up, and I'm getting richer than you. I mean, it's a king's ransom. But I got to see sort of how the process is and what the CPMs are, because when you actually have advertisers and they propose advertising on your feed, and you either approve it or don't. And so it's, oh, do you want to do this? It's a $3 CPM or a $6 CPM. And then you get to see the click-through rates and all that stuff. So that's been actually quite interesting. And it's a very simple, smart, automated process. And so you could see how by adding that feed burner piece into the rest of the network, suddenly now advertisers on Google can say, okay, I want this ad in feeds. I want this ad as AdWords. I want this graphical ad in in the broader network, whatever.
So they'll split it up as the type of advertising.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see, because I mean, you know, they could just say, "Hey, we're going to advertise across a huge network, and you'll get performance, but the price is X."
Yeah.
FeedBurner isn't advertising on a word basis. Now maybe they'll do that next. Maybe they'll be able to parse RSS feeds and say, "We'll sell."
AdWords.
In an AdWords-like way into RSS feeds, which would be very interesting, right? It would be interesting to see whether that increased click-through, whether that increased the efficiency of the advertisers, et cetera. So anyway, it makes a pile of sense. And so, you know, congratulations to the FeedBurner team, but also I think congratulations to the Google team because, boy, oh boy, I can't believe that all these other companies that care about the ad model are just letting Google buy everything. Like, where, you know, hello, people!
Start buying.
this FeedBurner thing was a good thing, you know, pretty valuable, great team and all that. So there's an added bonus. Actually, I've been exchanging emails with my good friend Mark Hedlund today. Mark said that there was a bonus dividend in the sale of FeedBurner to Google. Now, what he meant by that was that he had told me to fund FeedBurner, and the dividend is that he gets to taunt me. Which I think is very nice that I failed to fund FeedBurner.
Oh,
now
they
get sold,
make
a bunch of money, and now he can taunt me again you know, hey, you should have done that.
Right.
You know? And, you know, Mark, hats off to you. You have been more right than wrong.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to join August Capital?
Yes.
Anyway. Yeah. But as I said to Mark in my email back to him, I think that the added bonus is that the folks from FeedBurner are going to spend more time out here now, and that's great.
Yeah.
I think it's great because...
get them out of Chicago, for crying out
loud. Yeah, right. You know, that Chicago, particularly in the winter.
Yep. good time.
We'll see them a lot. I'm guessing we'll see them a lot from, say, sort of October, November through February, March. Well,
it's not like summer's over there all that great either.
That's true. Yeah, maybe we'll see them year round. So anyway, so that's good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then Last FM got bought.
But CBS is going crazy, man.
Yeah.
They're like buying the web.
Well, hey.
They're buying their web arm.
You know, so Les Moonves was speaking at D.
Oh, was.
Really great. Very smart, well-spoken. And he had been pretty well-primed on the web world. I saw Mike Marquez there. Mike's the, I don't know, what are you, Mike? SVP of Corp Dev and Strategy or some such thing. Mm-hmm. And then Quincy Smith, who was brought in, who everybody has huge respect for and clearly focusing on this stuff. And the interesting conversation around that Les had, that is an interesting contrast to others, that they're putting out their content really broadly. And this idea of distributing it broadly instead of creating this walled garden, which I think is a smart strategy. And his point was, look, this is an advertising medium. We get distribution and then we serve ads and we get paid. So, you know, why wouldn't you want broad distribution?
And right.
And so long as he has the capacity to continue monetizing those assets as they get distributed broadly, he is dead right. You know, so if Quincy and Mike and Les, not necessarily in that order, but perhaps in that order, can figure that out, then, you know, they're going to build a very interesting, big new media property, not just an old media property. So that's exciting. Right. And then Stumble Upon was officially announced. They got bought by eBay, and that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, so my personal view on that one, I think I've proclaimed my love for StumbleUpon in the past on this show.
You have indeed.
So who am I to, you know, not continue that? The thing that's great about StumbleUpon is that, you know.
You're not bitter?
Am I bitter?
I mean, you didn't invest in StumbleUpon either.
I didn't have the chance. I tried. Yeah. I tried. I like those guys.
You got to muscle your way in.
Look, you know what? Look, you people, all.
Okay, the amateur perspective, here it comes. He's gonna.
No, I'm just, you know, look, this is a long-term business. Those are great entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. I really like them. I look forward to chatting with them about the next thing they build. They were given the opportunity, having raised $1.5 million, to sell their company for $75 million, you know, under pretty much any circumstances. That math works well for the founders of StumbleUpon. And so I'm just, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to kind of go in and make this big argument. Hey, you guys, you're crazy. You got to take my money. You know, you're out of your mind or whatever. That's just not, I think entrepreneurs have to make rational choices about what risk versus long-term reward, et cetera. And, you know, the contrast to what those guys did is what Mark Zuckerberg did, which is to have been offered prices that, you know, by all accounts would have made him many hundreds of millions of dollars. I repeat, many hundreds of millions of dollars. But by the way, let's just do a quick little exercise. I think this is a valuable exercise.
Okay.
Let's say you take $100 million and you put it in the bank.
The bank.
In a savings account. What does like a savings account get you?
2-3
Let's say it's 3%. Okay. Let's say you get like the crappiest rates, but you get a 3% return, $3 million. That's what you get next year on your savings account on $100 million. Okay.
I could live off.
Guess what? If you don't spend that $3 million next year,
compound
you make the interest on $101 million. Let's say you spend two.
Yeah.
Now you got $101 million and you know, make your 3 point something million. I mean, that was $100 million. I mean, and by the way, you'll get more than 3%
when
you have $100 million.
They'll probably
so let's
encourage
say it's five.
You.
Now you got $5 million.
Wow.
Anyway, but Mr. Zuckerberg, despite this math, said, I think this is something big and interesting. I want to control it. I want to grow it. And then, you know, bang, F8. Holy cow. Well, we should talk about that. Were you thinking about that? I'd forgotten about how amazing and huge this F8 thing is. So I guess I should give some context.
You should, because I'm not up on that as well.
So F8 is, so Facebook, so here's a further contrast.
Okay.
You've got MySpace. PhotoBucket starts serving these slideshows and monetizing them on MySpace. MySpace shuts down PhotoBucket, says you cannot monetize the traffic sitting on our network. And they have a big scuffle, and then they ultimately buy PhotoBucket for a bunch of money. I was hanging out with a couple of the PhotoBucket guys at D. They seem very happy. They've done that math, by the way.
Yeah.
They've done the how much
they did,
you know.
They did it early
but
on.
Anyway, In contrast, what Facebook has done is it has launched this thing called F8 that says anyone who wants can build an application on top of the photo bucket infrastructure that allows you to serve these applications into your photo bucket profile. And so suddenly you can have, I've been getting lots of these applications now. So Kongregate, which is this cool new social gaming platform, has created some games that now play into your photo bucket, your Facebook profile. Mm-hmm. I got an email from my friends at Oodle. They have an application that lets you track and manage things on Oodle over, you know. And is this music thing. Mm-hmm. And it's getting a huge amount of traction and energy and excitement because it's the number one application being placed on the courtesy of F8 in the Facebook platform. Mm. Right. So, mm-hmm. and the interesting thing that Facebook said was, go ahead and monetize it any way you want and keep the revenue yourselves, which is just an incredibly different point of view from what's being said at Facebook.
Wait,
and so
at
MySpace.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Oh, man.
All right.
You know what I'm saying.
I'm with you.
I'm all riled up.
I know.
So they announced this thing. They launched the platform. There are a bunch of companies, you know, big companies that they're working with, Amazon and others, that have built applications. They show them. They have a hack night. People get excited. The velocity of requests that I have at this point on Facebook is out of this world.
Hmm.
In fact, I was sitting next to Owen Van Natta, who is the COO over at Facebook at the Wall Street Journal conference, and I kept showing, you know, like, here's my, mm-hmm. look at my trio. This is what you're doing. Here's another one. No, another one. You're like, hey, Craig Severson claims he's your friend. Oh, come now.
Oh, come on. Reject.
Deny. So anyway.
You don't have to send those nasty raspberry sounds with that denial, by the way. it's really embarrassing.
What is voice SMS for? Okay. What for?
VSMS.
Anyway, I don't know even how we got here.
I interrupted you a long time ago about StumbleUpon, trying to taunt you. And then,
Anyway, StumbleUpon, the guys took an opportunity to sell into a big company. Again, I think this is really smart, and I've been saying this for some time about eBay. I think that eBay needs to compete as a broader social media company in order to continue to keep its costs down, right? They can't possibly rely on searches on Google and Yahoo and elsewhere for traffic and not somehow be hampered in the same way as if they had their own source of really interesting traffic that would drive, you know, would continue to drive commerce to their various platforms.
So you think that's the strategy, is bring people from the outside in rather than those who are in...
giving them some more stuff to do. Well, I think that it will be this virtuous circle. But yeah. I would start, if I were them, I would start with outside in. And you know, look at blogs, the amount of blog traffic around every category that drives information into potential eBay auctions or whatever. I mean, I think that's an interesting one. And so StumbleUpon, again, what's interesting? Oh well, they drive lots of conversation traffic, and maybe it becomes a media platform, maybe it becomes an advertising platform, maybe it just drives users to consider and think about these things. So I think that's exciting for eBay, and I think it's exciting for the StumbleUpon founders.
And they've been around. You went to their party, I think, on the last show we talked about.
It was their fifth anniversary?
Yeah. So,
I mean, they were around for quite some time in Canada, where they went to school and got together, and less time here in the Bay Area, but looks like they'll be here for a while.
Yeah.
So... what cool. else?
Mahalo.
Ah, mahalo. So Mahalo launched at D. Jason Calcanis, who those of you, you've heard Jason on our show before, taunting us.
Mm-hmm. And now he's a fan.
He is a fan, although he did say to me.
Now he's back into his taunting mode.
No, but he said.
What?
What do you guys, still can do, why don't you do more shows? You can still doing shows. And I said, we do it every other week. It's what we do. No, you don't. We had that
one time.
A little period of time.
Once.
Right?
Once.
I mean, you know, so anyway, so Jason, we're doing a show.
Here it is.
Don't be dissing us for missing
your
our
mistake.
Schedule briefly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, for your mistake. Exactly. Right. So Jason was there and he's launching Mahalo, which is I believe they're describing it as a people-driven search engine.
Right. Human-powered search.
Human-powered search. Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't want to mess up their messaging.
As it turns out, a very close friend of our family is the CTO, Mark Jeffrey.
Oh,
so,
all right. So
congrats all around for that.
Wait, now where was Mark before?
Now, Mark
this?
Started PopCurrent, which was the...
gotcha.
And before that, he wrote a book, Pocket and the Pendant, one of the first podcast novels.
God. Active podcaster. So he was there too. Yes. And I didn't. If I had known the relationship, I would have gone up and said, you know, like we have, we have like a mutual friend.
Yeah, man.
And you know, that's all. That's what networking is, right there.
That is.
That's just a little lesson of networking right there, and I missed that opportunity.
I didn't tell you ahead of time.
You didn't want me to harass him.
You know, they hadn't launched yet.
He didn't need that. He didn't need that, frankly. No. Me bugging him.
Yeah. And they have plenty of money.
So here's the thing. Yes, they do have plenty of money. Mm-hmm. I did bug Jason about that, but his comment was, the value. You wouldn't have paid the valuation that I that I raised it at, which
I demanded.
I thought, well, that was, like, you know, well, right on. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the theory upon which Mahalo is based is that 25% of searches constitute a mere 10,000 search terms.
Right.
And that spam is at such a high that people are gaming search results, that those search results, particularly for those 10,000 searches, are getting worse and worse.
Certainly as the web is getting older. And
right, so I'm sort of with them, right? I mean, I have oftentimes observed this. Gee, there's so much economic interest in getting to the top of those searches that it's just going to be harder and harder for the Googles, Yahoos, MSNs of this world. And Jim, my apologies, and ask, of course, to maintain the quality of those searches.
Mm-hmm. And have a differentiation as well with other services.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And on the differentiation side, I should just say this. There is a new rev of ask that's coming that is awesome.
Mm.
And I look forward to talking more about it. In fact, maybe we'll get Mr. Lanzone to come chat with us because Jim's a great guy, and Doug Leeds, who runs product over there, is a great guy, and what they're doing around differentiating the results that they come up with and the visualizations and all this stuff is really great, and they deserve to get credit for that, because I just don't see that kind of ongoing innovation in the larger platforms as they chase after other things that don't make our search experience better. So anyway, Mahalo says, hey, we're getting spammed, the results are crappy, and if you give a human being the opportunity to create a result for a particular search, like hotel in Hawaii or whatever, that they will come up with better results. And so they're hiring a bunch of people, and the people are creating a bunch of results. And if you search one of those 10,000 search terms in the near term, although I don't know how long it'll take them to get those 10,000 built out, you'll get a better result because it'll have been human-driven as opposed to machine-driven. There you go.
There you go. What else?
So I'm at this thing, this D, All Things Digital conference. Yes. Hanging out with Martha Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know we were hanging out.
But but you were proximate.
She was there.
Yep.
Hanging out with people and George Lucas. How awesome is that? You know what? Yeah. If I can go hang out with George in a crowd of people that includes George Lucas
and Martha Stewart,
I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I'm just a happy man because I think it is at least partially a men versus women thing, but not entirely. I'm not suggesting it's entirely. But, man, geeky men worship the ground on which George Lucas walks. And, frankly, he deserves it. Mm. I mean, God, I certainly have a vivid recollection of seeing that very first Star Wars movie. And then every Star Wars movie thereafter. Mm. And not to mention the Star Wars cards that my brother and I collected. And the Star Wars, I mean, there's in fact a box in my... I wonder if he took it back, but there was a box in my garage that was all of our Star Wars characters that Josh somehow claims are his. I don't know how why he thinks that they're his.
Yeah.
But I think his argument was they were always mine.
Oh,
what is that?
Oh, rewriting history approach.
They were always mine. Oh, yeah, really? The ones I got for Hanukkah? The ones I got for my birthday?
Yeah.
Those were always yours? Apparently, because he has them all. I had that great ceramic Darth Vader light that I got in the school raffle.
Uh-huh.
How do you like that?
That's pretty
awesome.
Cool.
Awesome. So then there's George Lucas. And by the way, do you know how much money the combined Star Wars properties have made? I read this recently, so George, my apologies if this isn't right, but I read from credible news sources how much money the combined Star Wars properties have made over time. Any guesses?
You know, actually, we talked about this very thing last night on This Week in Media. Our whole show was Star Wars and the influence of Star Wars on new media.
Unbelievable. This is what I'm saying.
But John did the research. He has the number. I forgot it already. But it was a big number. Lots of commas.
$22 $22 billion was the number I heard.
Yeah.
$22 billion. Actually, you know, it's funny because in his talk, George Lucas said at one point sort of offhandedly, well, you know, you guys run big companies. It's not like I'm making $1 billion a year or something. Yes, he is. Liar. You're making $1 billion a year, my friend, and it's all yours. Yours.
It's a combined thing. There's a bunch of companies.
That he owns.
Maybe he's
Industrial Light and Magic.
Skywalker Sound.
LucasArts. One of the greatest field trips I ever went on was I was taking a class at Stanford called Physics of Music.
Ooh.
The Physics of Music, which was awesome topic.
You were taking the class.
Yeah.
Okay, you weren't teaching. I was getting
I taught a separate one called Technology and Musical Aesthetics. Different. This was the Physics of Music. And so this is, you know, back in whenever, in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a field trip to Skywalker Ranch.
Yes.
And Ben Burtt and they, like, and all the sound designers did this presentation in the main theater in Skywalker Ranch. You know, the field trip that we took to Dolby Labs was awesome, but not that awesome. Holy cow, that was so great. That was worth the whatever $13,000 in tuition right there.
Yes. It's a beautiful place.
It was so cheap back then. Imagine that. Imagine only paying $13,000 to go to college.
When our children
go to college
for a whole year.
It'll be really ugly.
It's uglier for you.
Yeah, right, exactly. Mine's the fact that I have a 5-year-old, that's a trend that's against my interest.
Yeah. Yes.
But anyway, so George Lucas. Yeah. Oh yeah. So where were we? Oh.
So you're hanging out with
Lucas there and whatever. And Jill Sobule, who I don't know if you know Jill Sobule's music, but if you don't, you got to go to Jill Sobule, SOBULE.com. She's just great. She's just incredibly fun. She sings really interesting, clever songs. And she's gone to TED for a number of years, and she sang at D this year. And so I was hanging out with Jill, which is always incredibly fun. I shamelessly made Jill watch my son's latest music video. Oh. I know. You stopped that. She enjoyed it. See, this is how nice Jill Sobule is.
Mm-hmm.
She pretended to enjoy it.
Mm, yeah.
She said, oh, doesn't look at him.
Wow.
You know, whatever. By the way, have I mentioned that you can now go to julianhornick.com and check out all of his latest...
his latest music videos?
You know, actually, this is interesting. So, TypePad, Six Apart's TypePad. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am on the board of Six Apart. Mm. Six Apart's TypePad service now has a thing called Pages.
Hmm.
That says you can create essentially static pages as opposed to blog pages. So you can create a particular page because, you know, look, sometimes you want this reverse chronological blog kind of experience, but sometimes you want just a page. So we click through, there it is, right? In fact, it would have made it easier for my website for my conference if I had just created these static pages. Mm. But anyway, Julian decided to create his new julianhornick.com and was so psyched to have pages because then he could, just put up a page with videos, put up a page with this, here's my music, whatever. So so it's very cool. So I'm psyched about that. And it makes me think back to sort of this Homestead, right? Homestead created the earliest, best product that was, you know, that was sort of designed to do better things than Tripod and these early page makers. And a lot of it was about this, creating better pages for restaurants and haircutters and whatever else. So now,
so just web pages, not blogs.
Yeah, not blogs, just web pages. And now, my apologies to Homestead, but Six Apart is sort of building into TypePad the capacity to create that, and it works great. And it's
it's different than a permalink in that the pages show up on the homepage as
It's just that if you wanted to, you could create a link to a separate blog that you never updated, and therefore it wouldn't change, right? On the other hand, this is about creating a single page that's intended to be static, and therefore you can format as a static page, etc. It's just a different paradigm than the blog paradigm, which was what. Obviously, TypePad was built on, but people want the flexibility to have both. So now you got both. And you can check it out at julianhornick.com.
Shameless plug.
All right.
Did you hang out with Steve and Bill?
So Steve and Bill were there. I actually wanted to go chat with both of them, but oddly enough, they were swamped with people chatting and chasing
rude
them. And
people.
And they didn't recognize, they didn't say, you know, well, hey, wait a second, David.
VentureCast guys.
Where's David?
Here,
you know, he should come on over.
They were distracted.
So I got to tell you, they were so great.
Hmm.
So I mean, I can't understate the degree to which they were great on stage together. It just worked. I mean, Walt and Kara must have been so happy after that conversation. And they started it with this really great montage of the two of them, how they, when they'd appeared together before.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first thing they showed was just awesome. I hope it makes its way. Actually, it probably is on. So Karen Walt have this new website associated with the conference. Mm-hmm. It's called All Things D. So you can go to allthingsd.com. And I hope that they put this video up, because the video was the, I think he called it the software dating game. And it was Steve Jobs. He must have been, I don't know, 18, maybe 20. Oh, maybe it was the Macintosh dating game. But anyways, you know, I want to introduce to you the contestants for the dating game. They're software creators. Which one will we choose for the Macintosh to drive the software? And it was like an 18-year-old Bill Gates. And then Mitch Kapor was there from Lotus, and the VisiCalc founder, you know, and the three. And they all, like, you know, it was like, well, tell me, contestant number three, Bill Gates, you know, what can you provide for the Apple platform? And then Bill says, you know, well, we've got this great, you know, floating point basic or whatever, you know, whatever he said. I can't remember the specific, but it was just such a great historical document. And then they went through the rest, and then they brought the two of them out there to talk about, just sort of talk about the history of the two companies, and the and of course, the history of Apple and Microsoft in many ways are a huge piece of the history of computers and personal computers. And it was just fascinating to hear. And Bill Gates is just a genius. That man is, he's just such a brilliant man. However you feel about whatever he's done, which, by the way, I don't know how you could feel anything but incredible gratitude for the fact that the operating system made it possible for standardization across, but whatever, I'm putting that aside. He was recounting conversations 30 years ago as if they happened yesterday.
Mm.
He was discussing the people that were in these conversations in this sort of vivid way.
Mm-hmm. Like scary memory kind of thing.
It just was amazing and really wonderful to watch. And he was incredibly gracious to Jobs and about the things that those guys had done right and the things that... And then it was this really funny story. I think it was about BASIC, where Gates started telling about it, right? Mm-hmm. Gates says, you know, like, well, the thing is that they had this BASIC, but we had this floating point BASIC, whatever. And Jobs cuts him off. And says, no, stop. That's not, let me tell it better. You know? So he says, you know, so then, you know, Jobs says, well, so this is the thing. Woz had written this BASIC. It was really incredible BASIC. It was like the best BASIC out there. It had all these features that none of the other BASICs had. He'd written it out on it by hand on a pad of paper, you know, Jobs says, but we kept on begging him to do floating point because he didn't have floating point. It was fixed point BASIC. And we kept on begging him. And Walt Mossberg said, so who were the we? Who were the we? And Jobs said, okay, me. I kept on begging him. But he couldn't, you know, he didn't do it. And so, you know, Microsoft had this thing. And so we went to Gates. And so we paid $35,000.
Right.
$35,000 for floating point BASIC so we could put it in the Apple II or whatever. So it was stuff like that. That was just unbelievable. And then in the very end, maybe it was the last question from Mossberg, or a question was, you guys have watched each other over the last 30 years. And so what do you appreciate about each other? Right. So Gates says, well, look, Steve Jobs, Steve has the best sense of taste of anyone. He said, we would have these conversations and I would look at them as a product and engineering question. And Steve would say, no, you know, from a consumer standpoint, from the experience and the, it should be this. And he was right. And he just has this incredible sense of taste and style and consumer understanding. And I really envy that, which is incredibly gracious.
Very much, yeah.
And so then you say, okay, well now what's Jobs got there? And Jobs says, you know, Bill has always had this incredible ability to partner across huge sets across the network and across the industry to drive demand and value back to Microsoft that has been unbelievably valuable, and I envy that.
Right.
You know,
I work alone.
Is of course this, you know, absolutely right. Look at the challenge that Apple has had versus Microsoft in that respect. It really, I mean, it was almost touching. I mean, at one point Jobs quoted a Beatles song. I wish I could remember the quote. And it might as well have been a love letter. I mean, it was like, but it didn't, it wasn't as if it was, oh my God, this is like totally staged, whatever.
Yeah.
It was like, it was this very genuine appreciation for what the two of them had done. And it was just the highlight of the conference by an order of magnitude.
Mm.
It really was just incredibly wonderful. Now there was this one brief moment. Everybody wanted a fight. which I think was completely wrong.
Right.
And luckily, that's not what we get.
Right.
But at one point, Jobs says to Gates, or no, he's not. He's answering a question to Kara or Walt. And he says, oh, you know, these PC Mac commercials, you know, they're good-hearted. They're good-natured. They're supposed to be, you're supposed to like PC. You're supposed mm-hmm. to, they're just supposed to be poking good-natured fun. And you see Gates's face, and he gives this look like, I don't know about that.
Right.
like I really don't appreciate these ads.
Gates said, I think the PC guy's mother loves him.
Yeah. Something like that. Right. Exactly. And it was started because Kara was saying, you know, look, I don't like the Mac guy. I like uh-huh. the PC guy.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
the PC guy's more, you know, more endearing or whatever. Right. That Mac guy, you know, yeah. which started this whole conversation. But it was just very funny for you know, Jobs to go, oh, no, it's supposed to be, it's like, you know, we're being nice. It's a nice thing. And Gates is kind of like, I don't think so. That's those commercials are not nice. So anyway, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're done with our show.
We're done? We're out?
We're done. All right. We're keeping it lean and mean.
All right. Well, good.
But we're going to do Dodgeball next show.
Yes, next week. Is that next Friday?
Mm-hmm. But we'll put out the show at the normal time, since in our normal schedule, I'll be out of town.
Oh, you'll
on
be
vacation.
Out. All right.
So we'll, okay. But we'll get the Dodgeball show in.
But yeah, so just
labor versus capital.
Exactly. Some brief clarification for those who are going, what are they talking about?
not the company.
We're having a
the real thing.
I had a conversation with my buddy Hunter Walk, who is over at YouTube, Google. Mm. And Hunter and I have these ridiculous breakfasts where we, you know, talk about them. Here's an absurd idea. And one of the absurd ideas was, we should have a dodgeball game. And Hunter said, yeah, labor versus capital. We'll have the entrepreneurs versus the VCs in dodgeball. And I said, cool, let's,
you're on,
you know, like,
right.
Why don't we do that? So there's this crazy place in San Mateo or something that has trampolines dodgeball court.
Trampolines?
It's trampolines.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't
you
know
literally
about
that have
part.
To bounce around and throw dodgeballs.
Holy
so we're
cow.
Having, so we are... signed up, I don't know, 30 or 40 VCs and 30 or 40 yep. entrepreneurs, and we're going to have
labor.
A...
I'm labor.
All right, labor. The labor. And we're going to have a dodgeball game. I need to get my, like, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar glasses by then.
I was wondering about that.
The security glasses.
No, these are big balls. They're not going to poke it. Not going to take your eye out.
It's going to be so fun. So we're going to do our show from Dodgeball and have conversations with, maybe we should split the show into, you know, labor conversations versus capital conversations. Maybe
yeah.
Ask each other, you know, see if we can have that same kind of Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, warm, fuzzy thing.
Yeah, right. You should probably have a mic guard on. If you take your mic phone out on.
Go out on this. How's it going? Oh. Darn it.
Well, if anyone's going to WWDC, I'll be speaking there on Tuesday morning on the media track. Giving a talk on video production and then
awesome.
The whole thing. So that's going to be the big Apple Love Fest next week, yet again.
What are they announce? Oh, we can't go into it. I can't wait to see what they announce. Of course,
I don't think it's going to be anything.
Nothing big?
Nah.
Someone was suggesting they were going to announce a smaller laptop that had no hard drive, just solid state memory.
Hmm.
How awesome would that be?
You mean like it syncs up with your Trio? And
oh, please. Oh, my God. I can't believe you didn't ask me about that.
I didn't. I was a little...
All right. Well, Adam, you know,
no.
I don't want to be mean.
No. No, you don't have to be.
It's just... Franklin Planner.
Yeah, well...
That's all I'm saying. Franklin Planner.
It's almost... It's one of those things. My wife and I were looking at this. It makes you scratch your head so much. It's like, is there a hidden genius here that I'm missing? So...
How long will it be hidden?
This.
I played with it.
Uh-huh.
By the way, I'm a Trio user. I'm
I know.
A fanatical Trio user. I have GoodLink on my Trio for syncing my email.
Yeah.
GoodLink is a very well-used application. Doesn't work with Folio.
I was wondering about that. That was my one
they
tech
They said,
question.
Well, we're leaving it to Good to do
Good.
The integration.
Mm.
What? What?
For
Come
many,
on now, people.
How many are going to? But anyway.
So, anyway. But yes, no, not like that. Like a really
full-functioning, like
really awesome, lightweight MacBook with solid-state memory, which would make it smaller and thinner and lighter and all that stuff. So
I can kind of see it in the Mac platform. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Because then you'd have that and perhaps a desktop, or if those exist anymore.
Yeah. No, it would be the thing you... I mean, look, I'd get one to travel with. It would be awesome.
Right.
Because, awesome.
Yes. All right.
Look at you. Worldwide Developer Conference, and you're going to speak...
Shoot.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. It'll be fun.
I'll come see that.
Yeah.
I'll come down. Say hello.
I think, and Steve gives his keynote on Monday.
I'll be waiting for
yes,
it.
Yes, sir.
I think that Apple bought Bebo.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. But how funny buy, would that be?
They don't buy anybody. They buy software companies.
They don't buy anything. That's not what they do.
They build it.
But you know what
they
should
do? They buy
software
companies, though.
They're crazy not buying Parallels. How have they not bought Parallels yet? Hmm. Parallels is about to come out with Parallels 3.0. Mm-hmm. I just saw this. Really cool. You can basically, so if you get a document, you can explain which application in which OS to open. So you click on a Word document and say, oh, always open that in Windows. Mm-hmm. Click on a PDF and say, oh, always open that in preview in, mm-hmm. in Mac. Mm-hmm. How cool is that?
That's cool. That's cool if you want to contaminate your Mac with
Windows with a Rogue operating stuff. Right. I'm just saying that they need to buy that. It is the thing that's driving their increased market share, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I would agree.
So much for our show being over.
I know.
There's just too much to talk about.
It goes on and on.
All right.
Thanks to Cashfly for providing our bandwidth.
Yes, thank
as
you,
always.
Cashfly.
What were you saying?
See you at Dodgeball.
Yes.
Art!
Paperwork pollution. There's just no getting around it. Okay, then. Get through it. Now from Sharp, maker of the world's most complete line of electronic calculators, the LC8. World's smallest electronic calculator by Sharp. Price tag to match. Works anywhere on battery or plug-in. LC8. Small, fast, silent. Ends paperwork pollution. LC8. World's smallest electronic calculator by Sharp. Price tag to match. $345. Complete. See it.